Welcome to the Restoring Our City podcast. We are back with another episode, and I think today, a little tough conversation to have. Just in light, we are recording this a day after another mass shooting. And you know, on this podcast over the years, we talk about today's topics that connect our community and really try to have those conversations candidly. And I'm joined with Jesswyn Thomas. And Jesswyn, I want to talk about this because it's a topic that we've wanted to discuss for a long time, actually.
Yep.
We've had it in our notes for more than a year, and we never wanted to be knee-jerk reactionists. And even though we're recording this, it just seems like this happens all the time. So let's jump into it. Let's talk about gun violence. First of all, did you get to hear and see some of this news, and what's kind of your just first reactions when you see something like this?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Whenever we talk about gun violence, obviously living in a city like Chicago, it's sort of highlighted on the national stage, right? People love to point to Chicago as the city that has this as a problem. And of course, us that live here in the city, you know, we sort of say, hey, you know what, we're not as aware of it because it doesn't really happen, quote unquote, around in our areas. But at the same time, you know, it has been increasing significantly out here in Chicago. And in fact, every single time there's a national conversation about this, I always look at, hey, last weekend, how many people were shot in Chicago? And usually with the weather warming up, you know, that average probably goes around 40 to 50 per week. Yet we don't know those names. We don't know who they are. It always reminds me of, we have a level of, you know, we should have a righteous anger about any sort of violent incident, sure, especially unjustly, but do we just neglect the amount that we see from a week-to-week basis and select which ones we want to be outraged about is something that always comes to my mind. But yeah.
No, I'm glad that you quoted that. And obviously, I live in Dallas now, and, you know, this news of seeing this was really frustrating. And I want to talk about the emotional aspect of it too, because I think we'll see the wave of posts, right, in people calling to action, people angry and infuriated. What's kind of the emotional perspective that you see when you see something like this? What's kind of the emotions that elicit from you?
Yeah. And I think people are rightfully angry. You know, when life is taken, we should be rightfully angry. The emotions, of course, anger is one of them. And really, that's about it. We are angry at the world. We're angry at our politicians. We are angry at perpetrators. But at the same time, we're also angry at this thought of, you know, whenever we see this, thoughts and prayers. Hey, we're sending you thoughts and prayers. I've also seen that we're angry at just saying that phrase. So there's a lot of anger across the board. And I also feel like, I mean, if I'm going to be completely honest, we are even more angry if the perpetrator is of a certain skin color, and more normal if they're not, if I'm going to be 100% candid here.
Yeah, no, and I want us to be, because it is infuriating, like, that we make political talking points out of tragedy. It's ridiculous, right? No matter what side of the aisle you are. And this selective outrage of people getting mad about certain types of violence. I think being from Chicago, we see things that happen in our neighborhoods, in the places that we work, and some places that don't get as much attention. And we can kind of get into the nuances, right? So there's definitions of mass shooting. There's intentional killings. And then there's illegal firearms. And then there's assault rifles. It's like, where do I direct my attention? It's all over the place.
Yeah.
But it seems like, if you're in a certain state, or if you're of a certain party and you fit this talking point, we're going to call attention to it. And it's not because of the people getting killed. It's not because of the lives that are lost. It's because we want to make a statement to score some points in Congress somewhere. That's what it seems like to me, right?
Yeah. And I actually wanted to pick your brain on this, Jobin, too. It's, well, you know, how are you feeling right now? And I want to say that because, you know, you had mentioned in a couple episodes before, right? One of the primary reasons you guys want to move from Chicago is, hey, the environment that our children are growing up in, especially that being unsustainable within a city, you know, you move to Texas, and I guess, you know, what has been your reaction at least this week, so that the listeners know too?
Yeah, I mean, if I want to be honest, like, I didn't know how to feel when I saw that news yesterday. It was like, kind of like a, I don't know, a deadening frustration. I don't know how else to, I wasn't shocked, which is saying something, right? Mm. Not shocked that there's another mass shooting in America. But I'm sad that there are people killed, and especially, I know that there are 8 people, as of the report today, a gunman shot and killed 8 people, including children. And that hurts me as a father. And I'll be honest, me and my wife talked about going to that very mall yesterday during the time that this occurred. We ended up not making, we had other plans, thank God. Yeah. And we were planning to go to a specific store. And I kid you not, when I read the article, guess what the picture was? The picture was of like a store, H&M, like we always go there. The picture was H&M, and then there's body bags in front of that store. And it's emotional to me because I'm like, I would have both of my kids with me, right? And it's people running around. We were just at that mall a couple of weeks ago with, you know, my family, cousins, eating, walking around, just having a great time, right? And it's sad that this is the world that we live in, and primarily because we tried to escape it. We tried to do some human actions, like moving across the country to escape something, to say we might be safer, but we're not, right?
Come on back.
Yeah, I think it might be time to come back. But, you know, our hearts go out to people, and I don't say that lightly, because to your point, right when I saw that story trending on Twitter, is thoughts and prayers, hashtag thoughts and prayers. And if you look at all the subsequent tweets underneath that, it's all just disparaging comments towards, you know, like our politicians and our leaders who are expressing their condolences to these families. Mm-hmm. But people are wanting action, right? People want to see something happen. It's interesting that, you know, we live in this society, and there's a lot of data. We can kind of get into some of the stats if you want. You know, I know you're a stats guy, but when we talk about America, and it's just mass shootings happening in America more often than other developed countries, I know there are some other underdeveloped countries that might have higher rates, which we can kind of talk about that perspective too. But why does it happen here so much? Like, and why do you think it's just so prevalent and nothing ever changes? Which is a loaded question, I know. But
yeah, that is.
What do you think?
Definitely a loaded question. You know, from my perspective, obviously there is a simple answer, which is if there are guns, there will be gun violence, right? And so where do you go with that? And how do you think about it? It's such a hard and convoluted topic. But I do want to highlight one thought that I had presented to me. I can't recall from who, but they'd been pointing out, you know, the data over the decades. And to say, you know, in the 1950s, I think we had like one mass shooting. And again, it was so out of the norm. It was like crazy. Like, what the heck is going on? I think, you know, in the 60s, it was, you know, double or triple that. In the 70s, even more. In the 80s, even more. 90s, you know, coming to modern day. And even school shootings, right? When Columbine happened, it was unimaginable. But now it's normative. You know, what has happened over the decades? Is it the fact that guns were less accessible 50 years ago? Or what has changed? Right. You know, from my perspective, I think from a spiritual context, we have abdicated our sense of morality, our sense of dignity, our sense of whatever. And so we have more people that are lost with access to higher ability to cause mass harm, maybe from the hurt that they're feeling or from the evil that they want to commit. I think that's maybe a root cause, and maybe guns is just a tool by which this is done. I don't know if you have thoughts on that statement.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, because when we talk about the evil and chaos in this world and the stuff that kind of results from access to weapons like this, it can only be bad, right? And you know, talking from a Christian perspective, we can, you know, spout all the Christianese too, to say like, hey, we, you know, just pray about it. But we really have a void in this country when it comes to morality. And we could see it just slipping away into this individualist society, this just self-contained, like, I don't need God. I don't need morals. I want to feel like how I want to feel. And anything that infringes on that causes me to lash out. And I know there's this argument about, hey, is this a mental health issue? Is this a guns issue? Is it a people or is it the guns or whatever? And I know we could talk about some of the stats, and I think we should, because we need to be responsible about it. In 2021, the most recent year with the full set of data, 48,830 people died from gun-related injuries in the U.S. That's from the CDC. When we talk about that population, suicides account for more than half of those U.S. gun deaths, right? Mm-hmm. So suicide is a big problem. So when we talk about people struggling mentally and emotionally and through whatever problems, that's a huge component of it. But then we talk about the other side of it is murder, right? And we can get into like the definitions of mass shootings versus individual murders and gang violence. But we're talking about a pretty even split here when we talk about the data, right? Mm-hmm. But mass shooting seems like it just shouldn't happen, right? Mm-hmm. If I had to ask you, what is the point of an AR? I'm not expecting you to answer this, but almost rhetorically, like, what is the point of having a high-powered automatic rifle? Like, I don't understand some of the weaponry, but like, man, it just does not make any sense to me that people should have access to high capacity magazines. Yeah. Like, I understand the right to bear arms. We got to protect our family. But why do you need like that kind of weaponry? It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. You know, and I mean? Honestly, you know, I think 1994, if I'm not mistaken, did they institute an assault weapons ban for quite a while? And we did see a corresponding dip in homicide. So to say that, hey, there's some data here to support that argument makes a lot of sense. I think the counter argument is, well, you know, with the ARs that are already out there, who do you think is going to be giving them up if there was a ban?
Right.
Is it exactly the people that want to inflict violence or not? And so, you know, that's just a couple thoughts on that. But yeah, I do think there's some data to support your argument there.
Yeah. And it just doesn't make any sense to me, like, why you would need it, like, whether you should have it or not. Maybe that's another, we got to talk about that, right? But like, I just have never heard a great argument for why you need it. It's like, do I really need to kill this deer at high capacity? but what's the real point of it? Part of the reason why I think this conversation is so frustrating to me is because, one, the least among us, the most vulnerable people, right? Just everyday citizens. It's not like people are going to war. And we could talk about gang violence too. I mean, there's little kids. I just saw a 3-year-old got shot in the head by sitting at home in Chicago because a bullet went through the window and killed him. Mm-hmm. But I didn't hear that a ton on the news. I had to like dig it up, and I follow other, you know, city news outlets, but it didn't get the mass attention, which, you know, we could talk about that too. But there are debates within this conversation that just seem so concrete, to be honest, but we never see any action, like universal background checks, right? Yeah. Actually, the vast majority, and this is from a study from Harvard, the vast majority of Americans are in favor of universal background checks and expanding background checks. And even most of the, I think it's 72% of all NRA members actually support that too, which is crazy. The National Rifle Association, it doesn't make any sense. If everybody's for it, like, why don't we do something like this just to ensure? Yeah. Just mind boggling to me. I don't know why it doesn't happen.
I'm with you. I have no idea why, you know, again, mitigation measures have to be put into place with some of these things. But, you know, on that token, that's just a thing, right? I think it goes back to, why are people outraged about that phrase thoughts and prayers, right? It's because there are solutions that are out there. It doesn't seem like any action has been taken. And so what's your take on that, right? Should we be angry about just seeing politicians, people, whoever, just saying thoughts and prayers when, like you just said, hey, here's a policy that nearly everyone seems to be agreeing with, and even the people that are gun owners seem to be agreeing with, and yet nothing is done about it. Should we be outraged at that phrase, thoughts and prayers, because action is not being taken, or how do you balance that?
Yeah, I think as a Christian, when I see somebody just bashing thoughts and prayers, you know, I would be like, hey, well, just what do you say in that situation, right? When someone passes away, what do you expect a politician to say? Do you expect them to just pass a law? That's not really how it works, right? Immediately then and there. But at the same time, when it's empty words and you see a majority of your constituency supporting something and you don't enact that into law and you've had multiple chances, that's where I think everybody has a right to disparage you and like provide their voice and critique you on something like this. So I see that, but at the same time, there are people who are providing thoughts and prayers that are completely empty, right? Maybe we do that in our day-to-day lives too, right? Empty thoughts and prayers without actually thinking about it, without actually praying about it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it feels so disingenuous from politicians. And maybe that's why we all get bent out of shape and really frustrated because of situations like this. Trying to digest this, and I know this is a little all over the place in terms of like the data and the noise and the emotions that people hear about this. Like the president actually had a call to action to say he'd like to, you know, call on Congress to ban assault weapons, high capacity magazines, and require universal background checks. So there is an action that's been presented out there. Hey, can we do this? Right. Mm-hmm. But how do we address tragedies like this? You know, as a Christian community, and we look at something like this and we hear people saying thoughts and prayers are useless, we need action. What's just your take on that when you hear somebody say something like that? What is the action that we can take?
Well, I think that's for us, even within the believers, right? I think when we think of a church nowadays, I wonder how politically divided our churches are, right? Are we unified as a body of Christ with a diversity of opinions even within our own churches, or are we political monoliths as well? Because if we are political monoliths as a church and we don't reflect the diversity, not just ethnically, but also diversity in thought, how do we know that we're going to come up to the right solution, right? Also, if we don't talk about these things, and again, this conversation might be a little bit all over the place, might be raw, but at the very least, if we're not talking about things and really challenging our own thoughts and presuppositions, how do we know where we have fallen as well? Yeah. So, you know, what do we do within a Christian community? I think one is we should actually think and pray. As much as we can be angry about that phrase, first is, well, what's our first reaction? Is it anger or brokenness, right? When lives are lost and things are done, is it, I'm just angry at politicians, I'm gonna model the anger of the world? Or is it true, like, brokenness for these stories? And not just brokenness when certain situations come up, is it true brokenness for, again, for me in Chicago, you know, I'm guilty of this. I'm not broken for the 50 people shot every single weekend here, every single weekend. And look at our numbers. Right. I'm not. Maybe I've grown numb to it. Maybe I'm just looking at the stats, but not understanding these are people. These are more than just the statistics. Do I pray about that? And then two, do I actually think about that? Not thinking in the sense of, here is a very popular Instagram thing that's trending, let me just reshare it on my story, but actually do some digging, some thoughts, some counter perspective. Why? So that at the end of the day, we can bring a policy, right? Because if our policy simply is from, let's say, from the left side and say, let's just ban everything, maybe there are stats that support, hey, guns are a deterrent to actual violence, and we just don't look at that side at all. Or maybe we go to the other side and say, we just need guns, and that's already protected by the government. And you go back and say, hey, maybe putting limitations does mitigate a loss of life. We do need to think and pray, but actually doing those things, not just talking about those things. I don't know if you have a take on that.
No, you're right. And I think you're hitting on it that people don't want to talk about, right? Because we can clearly say, hey, it's the guns, it's the guns, it's the guns. And to an extent, I see that. But we're talking about, you know, just to give some stats here. In 2020, the most recent year for which the FBI published data, handguns were involved in 59% of the 13,000 plus gun murders. Rifles, the category that includes guns, sometimes referred to as assault weapons, were involved in 3% of the firearm murders. Right? So I see the actions, and I actually kind of agree. I'm like, why do you need an assault rifle? And we say it's the guns. But then when nobody bats an eye when it's the gang violence and it's the black and brown kids who are getting killed in the crossfire of gun violence from illegal firearms, right? Mm. Where's the uproar? Where's the posts and the shares and all that fun stuff, right? Like, that's where it seems disingenuous to me. Yeah. Not to say that I don't agree with banning some of these things and having background checks. Like, let's do it. But like, if we're going to be vocal, let's be vocal about the people's lives and not just a policy. And because your politics agree with something, right? Like, that's where I feel like we as Christians have to get out of this party line, which I think we fall into, you know?
And how do we do that though? Because I agree with you. We are so much more polarized nowadays, and our thoughts are shaped by, just like you said, you know, what the party line, quote unquote, is saying. But if we're going to be outraged by something, let's at least be outraged by the lie. Let's be at least standard on that, right? Let's not be selectively outraged by that. Let's at least hold that up as a standard and be consistent, right? Calling things out regardless of if it fits, you know, one side's narrative or another. But how do we practically do that within a church? I haven't been in a time in our country that has been more polarized, even just politically, from the level that states are so different from one. Honestly, you could go from California to Florida and you could probably feel like you're in two different countries with two different sets of values with two different sets of people, right? Yep. You can go from church to church nowadays and just look and you can have a feel of, okay, this church leans X, Y, or Z way, but how do we do this? You know, how do we do
I think we have to get out of our echo chambers, number one. And like, if the focus, if you're always finding yourself aligned with one political party and it ends up not being about the people, then I think you're already down the wrong path, right? Like, if you really cared about black and brown people, then you would care about gang violence more than we do in this country and more than people propose that they are, right? Instead of spinning narratives based on race and ethnicities and whatever demographics you want to split the pie in. But if we really cared about those people, then we would be invested into those communities. I heard a great, just a conversation with a family member of mine who were talking about a church in the south side of Chicago that they got to visit in Lawndale, and they planted their church in the neighborhood where there is so much violence, right? And that's action. That's outside of party lines, right? It's conservative values in serving the most needy people. I don't know what their politics are. I have no idea. But just hearing how they invest their time, effort, and energy in where they live, caring about the people who are around them, I think that's the best way to get out of your politics. All right, well, if I really care about these people, faith without works is dead. And I need to provide some actions and some faith into it. There's thoughts and prayers, but where is the faith, right?
Yeah.
In the fact that God could do something with these tragedies and ultimately restore what's broken, which is our communities and our nation, right? I'm just reminded of a lot of like the Old Testament and how like in Habakkuk, it's, you know, he's crying out to God for some justice in the suffering in this world. And God comes back and tells him that he will ultimately restore everything. Right. And it's, I was expecting this like crescendo and like, everything's going to just save the day. Right. But like, God promises that he's going to restore the nation, but it's not going to happen just yet. Write it down, and in due time, it's going to happen. And I just wanted to read this in Habakkuk 3. And in verse 17, it says, though the fig tree does not bud and there's no fruit on the vines, though the olive crops fail and the field produces no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, Yet I will triumph in Yahweh. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. Mm. It's like, even though the world is falling apart and there's chaos in the world, because you promised you're going to do this and restore us one day, maybe not in our lifetime, but you are going to do it. I'm going to still put my faith. So there's like thoughts and prayers, but there's got to be an element of faith that God's going to provide justice. And I don't think we do that in this country enough. To your earlier point, we've taken him out of the equation. Mm-hmm. And we're looking for solutions to congressmen for an existential problem like evil.
Yeah.
Right.
And even from a practical level, I mean, how many times do we make the argument, hey, we just need to separate the church and say we need to separate? What does that mean on like a practical level? I mean, honestly, from the beginning, it's that the state doesn't create a religion for the entire country, right? Just like the Anglican Church was in England, or Catholicism was in Spain, or even if we go to Iran and there is a theocracy, that is not supposed to happen here in America. It doesn't mean strip the moral, you know, heart of your politics out of the legislation that you pass, right? At the end of the day, all of these politicians are walking by a moral code, and that moral code will be enacted into the laws of our country. Now, if those laws either align to scripture or don't, is contingent on, well, what code is everyone walking by? Does that mean that we just look for a Christian candidate and elect them? No. Even within the Christian church, how many times are there false teachers and false? I mean, honestly, sometimes I listen to some of these pastors that are elected and I just hear them from a pulpit. I'm like, what are you preaching, bro? Like, where are you coming from? No idea. But at the same time, it doesn't mean we strip like the heart of, you know, what should be the governing legislation and replace it with something else. So, yeah.
With chaos, with no standard, right?
Yeah. And even to that, you know, I love that you spoke that, right? You have to keep an internal perspective in mind, not to say, let's just, you know, at the end of the day, we're just going to look to the future and not care about the present. No, we do still care about the present. I'm reminded of, you know, Micah 6, where it says, like, do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly. And I think that is part of our action call. You know, honestly, we don't do justice. We speak about justice. We don't love mercy. We want to morally show our indignation. And honestly, we don't walk humbly at all. We don't. Right? Those are three things you can do starting today. And if I were to go to your social media post 1 month from now when something else happens, does it even fall into line with what you're called to do until God comes back and does enact his justice?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. No, well said. And I think that's the verse that really speaks to what we should be doing, right? What our call is something that we've been talking about for a couple of weeks on this seasons of our podcast. Mm-hmm. And man, it just seems like people are going to look for actions from a very temporal source, and it's always going to fail. Like, okay, I get it. It's the guns. There's also crazy people out there. So do you think a law that's just looking biblically in the story of the Bible, laws enacted for a fallen set of people are going to fix them? It's not,
right?
Literally. Mm-hmm. Like, we think about it, we kind of see that story told over and over and over again. Like, pass all the laws. I'm probably in favor with some of them too. I think they might work, but that's not going to change the moral fabric of society. Like, we as Christians, and that's the crazy part where I see people just clamoring over change of our politicians and putting faith into places that are ultimately going to fail you. Even though I might agree with some of those decisions, like, it doesn't make any sense why we don't have any universal background checks, or why we have these cannons like in people's garages that they want to use. It just doesn't make sense. But I have no faith that that's going to change the fabric of our society. Right. Mm. And there's only one thing that can, right? Like, it's, you know, I think about restoring our city and just even the theme of that. And like, we as people who are broken, it can only be restored one way only, is through Christ. And like, man, making him known and having that embedded into your heart to change you from the inside out. And man, when I see the gang violence, it hurts my heart. When I see news stories like this, it hurts my heart. It makes me scared to send my kids to school. Mm. All those things have not changed. Those emotions haven't changed. But like, faith in who God is and that he's promised to protect us, that's the only thing I can hang my hat on, you know?
Yeah.
maybe that's not what people want to hear, and it might not make a great soundbite, but it's like, but that's the only reality I could take from this, as I see this repetitive news story in the news that we're going to see again, right? We're going to see this again. We're going to see the same posts. We're going to see the same empty call to actions, and we're going to expect something different, like a group of insane people. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't want to be a knee-jerk reactions to this, but it's just one of those things that we were planning to record today on something completely different. And then
yeah,
it's like one of those things that just hurts your heart. And I'm sure it hurts our community's heart, especially in this area. And people may have had family members, friends affected. You don't know. It's just so recent. These are the things that impact our community that I think we need to talk about. And the church needs to get behind.
Yeah,
whatever potential solutions we can, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, honestly, Joe, but I'm glad that we're having this conversation. And again, this is such a, just like you said, this is totally out of the norm, but we decided, hey, this happened. It hit pretty close to home. We have been meaning to talk about this, and we just want this to hopefully be a starting point in the conversation. But I'm sure there's people out there listening that have put way more thought into this than we just did in the last hour, half an hour. And if you have thoughts on this and would love to engage, please reach out to us, because we do want to engage with you. We want to talk. And like we said, we want to think more deeply about this issue as we pray more humbly on it too. So please engage with us. We don't care what your perspective is on it. We don't care if you are on the right side, left side, middle side. There is no side. There is only, you know, a side that can cause solutions, a side that can't. And there's only one way to be the church and bring, you know, the gospel to the world. So whoever you are, please reach out to us. We would love to talk to you.
Yeah, yeah. We'd love to hear feedback. You might hear some of these stats and say, well, what about this? And I think we could all, you know, look at some of these conversations, because they've been happening, but it's impacting all of us, right? Like, none of us are far from it at all. And this is just one of those things that I think we need to actually think about and pray about as a body of believers. Like, think about what we could do collectively, right? Like, if we all came together with solutions and really prayer behind it, like, man, couldn't that change the world? I really think prayers can change things, right?
Yeah.
Despite what Twitter thinks. Thanks, Jesuyn, for talking through this. I know these are tough conversations, and just raw ones to have. And those are the ones I enjoy too. So I appreciate you doing this. Thank you. And for all those people who are affected by this sad tragedy, our thoughts and prayers are with you, genuinely.
Yeah.
It's some things that we see way too often, and we hope not to see in the future. So thanks again for listening, everyone. And we will see you on the next episode.